to the Genius of Your Genes Summit. Today, we're going to be talking about salt because there's a couple of genes that you might have inherited that make you more salt sensitive. But there is so much misunderstanding out in the world about salt. So I'm very excited about this interview because you're going to learn things that will absolutely blow you away, completely different from anything you've previously thought. And, you know, you'll know exactly what to do about the salt solution. Now, we're going to be talking with Selena DeLongre, who is a very dear, longtime friend of at least 25 years. We've been in the space, health space, for a long time together. And, you know, two women just believing, supporting something passionately. She's super passionate, as you're about to find out. And so her father-in-law, Jacques DeLongre, brought the first decent salt into the U.S. Before that, I'm sure you remember, we had this salt in a blue round box and had a little girl on the cover. She had an umbrella because if it rained, it poured. The salt still poured. So the reason it did that was because they put all this junk in it, bicarbonate of soda, sugar, just kinds of chemicals, junk. So that's what we've been eating for a long, long, long time. And you keep reading, salt isn't good for you. And you're about to find out that's very, very not true. Anyway, Jacques, Selena's father-in-law, in 1976, so that was over 40 years ago, brought in this much healthier sea salt, Celtic salt from France. And that's what the company was called, the Celtic Sea Salt Company. But Selena has now changed the name of the company to Selena Naturally because she doesn't just have the Celtic salt anymore. She has a lot of other amazing salts that are, they have different medicinal properties to them. They have different tastes to them. So salt is really a very big story. And so I'm very, very happy to welcome my friend, Selena DeLongre.
Oh, Selena. Thank you, Donna. What a great introduction. I remember the first time I got a call from you at the office, and I think you were writing a book, and so you wanted to get a little bit more details on salt. And I fell in love with you the first time I heard your voice and your passion, and you've helped my family so much. You've helped my family, my daughter, helped my granddaughter come into this world. So blessings back to you so much.
Well, thank you for saying that because this is a gene summit and I had Carolyn Ladowski on. She talks about infertility, but a lot of couples today are having trouble, you know, getting pregnant right away, which is so different from our generation. Women hope they wouldn't get pregnant right away. And we didn't have birth control. So looking at Carla's genes, I was able to find several what I call Achilles heels, and she changed, you know, added some omega-3 fatty acids and sent me an email in about 3 months that a little baby's on the way, and we're waiting right now for that little girl to get here. So it's right now I'm getting chills.
Yeah,
so it's a power. It is a good example. I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot about it. Anyway, let's get into salt because there's a lot to say. Surprisingly, people think, you know, it's just salt. And, of course, I want them to know that the Celtic salt that you sell, that Jacques brought in and you've been pioneering for years, it's now all over the world. You can find it in just about every health food store, maybe grocery stores, but you can get it in Australia, Canada, England. It is it's a great salt, especially the gray salt. I use that always for cooking. And then the gray salt is, I guess you call it ground into a fine salt. And then I use that for other things where I need a finer salt. So but there's a bunch more salts that we're going to be learning about. So, Selena, why don't we just give people a little bit of history of salt that, you know, it's been around forever. So can you talk about the history?
I'd love to. I actually want to bring it back to the founder of the company, Jacques DeLongre, and his book, you know, what an amazing book it was that he wrote. The book was actually kind of started the passion of the book when a macrobiotic philosopher, George Osawa, gave him a huge thick book that was in French and was written by René Cantone. And René Cantone studied minerals and the bioavailability of minerals. And George Osawa gave this book to Jacques and he says, you must tell the world about the right salts to eat. And so Jacques, 40 years ago, took this book, and Jacques spoke 7 languages. So he was able to, before the internet, do a lot of research on salt and our body and why is it so important. So it's really not just to look at what, you know, the table salt is, but also the essential the most, this is the first natural mineralization is sea salt. It's like the perfect mineral supplement because it's in the perfect ratio. That's what he wanted to get a point to anyone. He didn't want anyone to think that this sea salt was going to give your daily supply of magnesium, potassium, just sodium and chloride, because he understood that the trace minerals are just as important as essential minerals. And sometimes with all the essential minerals in these salts that I have here, you can see all the minerals. There's 82, and some are just trace, but they all play a role together in the assimilation of the sodium. So the main thing is our body does need sodium, but it needs to be accompanied with all its little friends or it does not do well. And that's the main thing, is it's just like any whole food. You cannot isolate nutrients. You have to take them in their whole form. And that was what he wanted to get across in his book. He translated this book in 7 different languages. Oh. So that's why it's all over the world, because he started a revolution to educate people about salt.
Well, is that book still available?
No, actually, I took it off the market because there are some things that today I didn't feel comfortable by him by going out there, because I've done more research and I wanted to update the book and rewrite it, but these are his words. Mm-hmm. But since then, if he was still alive, he would be telling everyone about these other miraculous salts that we have found all over the world. Mm-hmm. And so I just could not really alter or edit this book to where it would still keep his voice. So I've just decided to write my own.
Oh, good. Well, so George Osawa, he started the macrobiotic movement. I personally was macrobiotic for 8 years. It was a great training. But ecology is very, if you want to put it, you know, personalize it that way, it can be macrobiotic. But there's way too much grain in the diet, actually, because so many people have candidiasis. But it was a great training and a lot of, you know, understanding of oriental medicine and balance, you know, acid, alkaline. So the salt was really critical. And so people that were macrobiotic were the only people that had access to this good salt at first. Mm-hmm. You're the one that's really gotten it out all over the world and all over the U.S. first. But so people originally, like hundreds and hundreds of years ago, I know Gandhi actually marched, just that famous march that Gandhi did was really because the English had, British had deprived the Indian of, they couldn't have salt anymore, and they were getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And so that was the purpose for his march that became so famous. It made him well known. But before that, even people understood the importance of salt. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Oh yeah, in history, you can see where politically they used salt to really control a lot of different communities and societies. And in places that they did prevent people from getting their salt, those people actually craved blood because their body wanted salt so much. They knew that there was sodium in blood and they would crave blood because it was a natural instinct that they really needed it. And there are some places where that's where the whole vampire stories actually started. So it's amazing when you really just do the historical information about salt. Even in the Bible says never offer grains without salt. So, you know what I'm saying? It goes back to
it's
where,
because the grains are acidic and the salt is alkalizing. So it's creating balance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's what is important for us to understand, is salt has had a bad reputation. But we have to understand there is salt that has its minerals attached and then salt that does not. And the sodium chloride that you would take without it, it's like a poison. You should never take it by itself. Sodium chloride should never be taken by itself. It can't work. Our potassium pump, the cells in the potassium pump will not open unless it's attached with sodium and chloride is attached. So, you know, the potassium pump, how it opens up, and it's in the cell wall, and there's 3 molecules of sodium here in the internal part of the cell, Out here is the potassium. So those 3 molecules attach in the cell wall, and then over here, a little bit of phosphorus attaches. It transforms the whole cell, and then it goes like this and opens up in the cell wall. These little sodium things fall out into the extracellular fluid, but then these 2 little potassium molecules attached here, and then the phosphorus attaches again, and so it goes like this, and then the potassium comes into the cell wall. And so wow. this is what's
That's
happening.
A lot of things happening.
And you cannot, sodium will not come in. If you just did a Google search today on YouTube, the potassium pump, mm-hmm. there's even cute little high school skits of kids with a sodium sign, a potassium sign, and a little guard saying, you can't get in without your potassium. They count on each other. And that's what we need to get across, is these elements depend on each other.
And there is potassium salt out there I bought some once. It tastes horrible. I have a new one though.
I'm excited to tell you about our new one and we can go through it, but it's amazing. It is amazing. It's off the charts potassium. Oh. I just got back from Spain with this salt. It tastes amazing. It's all naturally occurring. There's no man-made potassium going in it at all. I'm going to send you some.
Oh, please. What's his name? You have so many different salts. How would people know to get that salt?
It's not on the market yet. No, because I just now discovered it. But let me just tell you a little bit of its mineral contents to kind of give you. Right here is all of my salts. I just spent $10,000 on having every one of my salts tested for its 82 minerals and trace minerals.
And purity.
And the reason I did this is I got tired of making kind of Tim Hall answers to the people's questions. So I thought, I'm just going to get it down and really show it. And I myself, Donna, was completely surprised of the results. This new potassium salt that we have is, the sodium is only 1.014 mg per teaspoon. Let me tell you how that compares. I'm sorry, that's the calcium. Let me tell you the sodium. It's less sodium. I'm going to have to send this to you, but it's 104. Our light gray is 459 mg of sodium per teaspoon. This new one is 104 mg per teaspoon. Let me tell you, the potassium levels of this salt is off the charts too. The potassium is, this is such fine print here, but I really wanted to tell you guys this because it's naturally occurring. 61.725 mg of potassium per teaspoon. All of my other salts are like 2.73, 2.52, 7.02. The Mackay Pure has 11, which the Mackay, when I had the Mackay Pure tested, I was blown off. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I love when that I salt. That's delicious. We'll talk about these salts. I'd like to talk about each one individually.
I can tell you, now I'm prepared to tell you all about them, because before I had to just get the manufacturers and the suppliers spec sheets. Mm-hmm. I've really spent some money to talk about them properly and educated.
Okay, perfect. So let's get there. But I did want to bring the gene, the part about genes into the picture. So there's two genes, AGT and ACE. Remember, genes are always just letters or letters and numbers. They're never just numbers. At least I don't know about them. But anyway, letters and numbers. So AGT, ACE. And when I look at people's genetic charts and all, I see these very often there are variants, which technically means that the amount of sodium that they take in, they have to be careful because it's associated with high blood pressure. Now, as people get older, almost everybody by the time they're in their 80s is already on blood pressure medication. So I'm not, by the way, and I've been using this salt, Selena Salt, forever, and some of her others that I love. But I have those genes. I have two copies of AGT and two copies of ACE. So technically, genetically, I'm very salt sensitive. However, I want you to know two things. It totally changes. So when those studies are done on salt, they're not using the same kind of salt that Selena is selling and offering to the world. They're using the stuff in the little blue box. And so it's ridiculous. I've watched these, reports come out on all the time, and they say these things. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what kind of salt were they using? Who are they testing? So they need to redo all those studies for sure. And even if you have those genes like me, you can still take up to a teaspoon a day. And so, Selena, just like you were saying, that would give me a significant amount of potassium, if I spread that teaspoon out over the day, you know, you put a teaspoon in some grains that you're cooking, like rice, or you put it in soup, probably use more in soup, but you're not going to eat the whole pot in one sitting. You're probably going to share it with other people too. So we're not getting that much salt, and we are getting quality salt if you're going to follow what we're going to be talking about here. There's other genes for salt sensitivity, but those are the key ones and the most well-researched ones, and they're common. So this talk is an important talk. So I know you go all around the world. Let me ask you this first. What depletes us in salt? I know I have a little dog. Sometimes he barks in my interviews, but if he licks my skin, I know he needs salt. I'm not giving him enough salt. So animals need salt too. You know, I know you've talked before about salt licks for, pastured animals, for example.
Right. I think that everybody is completely different. And, if someone works out a lot, they sweat a lot, they probably mm-hmm. need more salt. Mm-hmm. A person that does not eat meat, they probably need more salt because there's salt.
Say that again. I didn't hear the word. A person that does not eat meat
because, you know, there's natural occurring salt in meat. Mm-hmm. If you've been vomiting, if you've been sick, even if you've been stressed, I believe those are the times where you probably would want to do just a little bit more salt. But I think you could just test your body. If you're finding yourself that you're extra thirsty, you're probably overdoing your salt. If you find that you feel like your meals are lacking something, you could probably do more. You know, it's amazing, Donna, all the different people that write about sea salt being like God's natural mineral supplement. And how they use it as almost a morning ritual to make a soleil before they even get out of bed when they're in an acid state to alkalize their body even before they get out of bed. They have their little mixture of, you know, like a couple grams of salt and, you know, 16 ounces of water with maybe a little bit of lemon. Mm-hmm. And they feel like it completely alkalizes their body before they even get out of bed. And, you know, it kind of brings their body into homeostasis.
So that's a really good thing to do, though, because we actually do wake up dehydrated and acidic. And I've always thought about that and talked to people about it, that, you know, people, there's always been a big argument, like, what do I have for breakfast? Should I have breakfast? Some people don't have an appetite. Everybody wakes up acidic and dehydrated. So that sounds like a great tip right there.
Yeah, and I forget to do it. It is a ritual that I think would be smart to, put it. And then there's also taking baths in salt. Your skin is the largest organ of your body. And so mm-hmm. by, taking a bath in salt, you can actually absorb that salt that way. So, you know, especially children, I know Dr. Dittman, that's the biggest thing he recommends for young kids is having a bath salt and always taking the water and, you know, flushing them with the bath salt with in the bathtub. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the ions and, you know, just everything about salt. I mean, you go into the ocean, you feel so much better, even just sitting in the air, not getting in the water.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, caffeine, I did want to mention that caffeine, coffee, chocolate, yeah. Those are two sources of caffeine that are commonly drank. We drink them or eat that. And they very much deplete sodium salt as well, too. So if you are a coffee drinker, you might even want to put a little pinch of salt in your coffee. You'll get used to it, too.
Well, that's your Europeans do that a lot.
Say that again?
Europeans do that.
Oh, they do? I didn't know that.
It's very common for them to do that.
Even if it tastes a little weird to put salt water, you know, drink salt water, you very quickly get to where you love it. That's good. I know you go over... So many times I've sent you an email, I'm in France, I'm in somewhere, Haiti or somewhere, looking for salts. And can you just talk about the fact that there's salts all over the world? Like the Japanese have had their salt. I'm questioning how contaminated it would be today. But can you just talk a little bit about how salts are all over the world?
Yeah, and I can tell you why I started that. We got a fear way back in 1994 when there was an oil spill, the Erica oil spill in the region where we were originally getting our salt, and they had to close down the salt production for the entire year as they cleaned mm-hmm. up everything. And it was really scary. I thought, wow, this is ridiculous that we would be dependent on one salt from one area and putting us in a vulnerable place. I'm promising good salt to people, but I can't keep that promise. So that's when I started to put my prayers out there, asking God, please help me find more salt. And that's when God started delivering the angels, and they just started coming to me. So I'm in Gannon one time in France doing salt, and I had to hire a translator. Her name was Betty Adams. And so she comes with me because I was looking for other salt farmers in France, but they didn't speak English. So she came with me, and she was my translator. So I was explaining to her that I heard about this new flower of the ocean in Portugal. And she said, oh, yeah, I deal with that. So we go to Portugal together and find a new flower of the ocean. While I'm in Portugal, she's telling me about this amazing salt from Spain, but she says it's very high in sodium chloride, but everybody's using it for manufacturing. I just put that behind me, and I'm going to come back to that as I tell my story. I put that behind me, never went there. I'm at a trade show one day, and we're just, you know, kind of packing up at Expo East, and this man comes up to me. His name was Miguel, and he gives me this little vial. It was 10 cc's of salt, and it was very white. And if you recall in Jacques' book, if it's white, it's not good. So I've always been skeptical of white salt because of what Jacques taught me. The minerals are in the gray. So I thought, oh, well, whatever. I send the salt to my lab, ENC lab. And when it came back, I was completely shocked of the profile of this salt. And I called the guy and I asked him, I said, you got to tell me more about this salt. And he said, well, you know, the big, and at that time, Donna, do you remember when people were buying deep water from Hawaii? They were high mineral waters from Hawaii, the Kona water and those waters. Well, in this area, he realized, well, what are they, here they're getting this deep water and they're bottling it and selling it. He thought, well, gosh, I wonder what kind of salt it would actually create. So this pharmacist started to experiment and bring the water that they were bottling that was from 2,000 feet below the surface of the water and bring it into these man-made little kind of salt huts that he had made and have a big fan that circulated all of the air so that the water would evaporate and it formed those amazing big white crystals. And that's the Makai Pure that is, you know, it's only like 72% chloride. It's very high in calcium and it's very high in magnesium. And its alkalinity is 10. So it's just, it's off the charts. It's like, wow, who would have ever thought? So I started to do more understanding. How could these properties be coming from this level of depth in the ocean? And there's really not a whole lot of studies that has been done yet because there is no photosynthesis that deep.
So, you know how people are concerned about contamination in the water, contaminating the salt?
Yeah.
Down below 2,000 feet, that's not an issue.
Not an issue.
I mean, it's so pure. There. And so, you know, what you haven't mentioned is that these salts all have different tastes, and I love the Makai salt. This was my favorite, and it's because I have these genes. It's higher in potassium than sodium for years. Now, I've told people that they have to call you to get it because it's unfortunately not in the stores, but I love it that there's a salt that tastes this delicious and it's got some more potassium in it. So for me, it was the perfect salt, but now it sounds like it's another option.
Right.
So I know you did spend a whole lot of money getting those tests done, and people are, I've heard this over and over again lately, the ocean isn't clean. It has plastic in it. This plastic is ruining all the salt because all the, like the keto, paleo people, they're all saying, don't buy that kind of salt from the ocean. You should get it from Utah, which there's a big salt area there where, anyway, you can talk about that, but better than I, but that's another mistake that your lab tests have just proven to be false. So another myth, I should say.
I'm not going to lie. There are microplastics everywhere in everything. And I did spend the money to have the test done. And some of my salts showed the most minute amounts in it, which to give you an understanding of the ratio, we sent two kilos. First of all, we had to send it to three different labs because I couldn't find the lab. I finally found one in Switzerland that would do this kind of lab work for me. And so I sent 2 kilos to the lab of all of my salts to see how they would come back. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, I mean, and I want everyone to understand the perspective of how much is in it. You would have to eat 10 pounds in, you know, to get just one of these microplastics in here. So I want everybody to understand this. And I've been fearful of even coming forward with it with that. But since then, I've been doing more studies, and there is no place or nothing that doesn't have microplastics in it. It just depends on, are you having the right test done? I get these emails every day. It's in the air. You actually inhale more microplastics when you breathe than you would get anywhere. It's in the water. It's in beer. It's in honey. It's everywhere. We are living in it. So I am not going to lie. Now, when I had the analysis done, I was very surprised because, and the whole audience can help me in this perplexity, because the coarse crystals of the light gray came back very minute, but now the coarse crystals is dried and then it's ground. That came back zero. It's the same salt, but it came back zero.
So in other words, somewhere along the way, this tiny little teeny bit of microplastic disappeared in the fine grain. So the Celtic sea salt shed a teeny, teeny bit, and then they ground it, and it disappeared. Maybe it stuck to the blades or something when they ground it. I do have a solution.
Everybody can join me in that interesting thing. But when I contact the laboratory and I said to them, can you break this down into parts, you know, parts per million per teaspoon? Their answer to me was this: the probability of somebody even ingesting any of this is not likely. But right now, this is too new information. People do not have enough studies and information to really go forward and understand how much you can do. You might just chelate this right out. You might poop this right out. We do not know what the absorption is. We do know that we know about BPA. We know about heated plastics. We know about all of that. But we do not know of the indigestion and everything that you're doing with these microplastics yet.
Well, I could add the answer there. Because
I feel safe that my salt is extremely safe. And I will continue to spend all of this money. And I even contacted every single salt source, shared this information with them. And I said, we need to partner to see how we can solution this together. So me and all of my 7 salt suppliers are working on ways. We cannot clean up the ocean, but there might be ways that we can make the process of the salt be better. Just like, you know, right now, if you say you're buying organic produce, are you really buying organic produce? Who knows? Do you see what I'm saying? So
I think I have a solution. You know, any salt that you ingest in your meal, which is probably how we're taking in most of it, it will be in the food. And one of the functions of the microbiota in the gut is that they seek out those minerals because we need them. And they, you know, there's a lot of more mineral sites in the gut than for any amino acids or anything else. So we need minerals desperately. I thought it was so fascinating when I learned that there are more receptors, more sites for absorbing minerals than any other nutrient. But the microbiota also have another important job, is they're very good at recognizing toxins, parasites, eggs, larvae, things like that, and toxins. If you don't drink a whole entire bottle of something, no. But microscopic, tiny little bits like you're talking about, remember, if you put some in the rice or the soup or something, you're not eating that whole pot. But you're that tiny little amount that you're getting, the microbiota, that's a big job of it that they have done in the gut. They scavenge out, basically, and they metabolize it themselves. It's hard to believe because you think it would poison them. And sometimes things do, like too much saturated fat will poison the good guys and let the bad ones flare up. But this is something that, so if people are eating fermented vegetables, a spoonful or two with their meal, That's ridiculous to think about the salt of your quality being a problem for them.
Thank you.
So now a lot of salts say they're iodized. Is sea salt, are any of your salts iodized? What does that mean, iodized?
None of our salts are iodized, but there is trace minerals of iodine in our salt. But it's trace. It is not, maybe 50 years ago, or when Jacques wrote his book, because he states in the book that you will get a sufficient amount of iodine if you eat the sea salt. Today, I think our iodine needs might be different, because I am not going to say there's enough iodine in our salt naturally occurring to get it. What I'm going to say is just like the complex of all of it, iodine needs a bond to be able to work and to be assimilated. And to just take a synthetic iodine, I am not really sure how that bond works and how long it lasts in your whole body. According to what Jacques said about iodine, is you need the bonds, you need it in its naturally occurring trace minerals. But what we
you will find that in fish, if people are eating fish and sea vegetables, so, or even a supplement. I know you have one of my favorite things you have is a sea vegetable supplement. You got it. God, thinking GSM's ahead of me there.
Right. I really wanted to make sure. So, I mean, we were getting into China. We had a resource that wanted to get our salt into China, but the law was that we had to have the salt iodized because of the, China's regulations. So I actually spent some money on how much iodine I should put in it. I had some made. I used iodide. And at the end of the day, when I was getting ready to say, okay, I really want this China market and I'm going to do this and I don't think I'm really doing anything bad, when they said, okay, now you need to have some sort of a chemistry kind of certification because this is a chemical, and I went, I don't want to play that game. So I pulled back and then we thought, well, we still have to offer iodine because one out of every three calls that we get, it's an iodine concern. So we have to take responsibility for that. So seaweed, so we put four seaweeds in this container, but we know seaweed doesn't appeal to everybody in flavor. So we put garlic, onion powder, and shiso leaves in here to camouflage the seaweed flavor. And it is good. I mean, it makes its own broth. If you just put this in a little warm water, you got like a little iodine broth.
Wow. Yeah, it's really delicious. It's a great, I sprinkle it on a lot of things. So, meat, which is some people even just doing carnivore right now, meat is also very, very acidic. So that's why I know I've noticed for years before I understood all about acid alkaline that if I don't have some salt for my meat, my chicken or whatever, something's missing. Like it doesn't taste good. Then you add that little bit of salt, perfect. And it's a very individual thing. Like everybody has a different need for salt, and our salt needs change throughout the year. You'll need, if you are sweating and you are an athlete, you'll take more. Women actually need less salt from the time that they ovulate to when their period starts. Once they don't need that much during their period, and then about, right when their period finally ends, they can start to take in more salt, naturally occurring salt in like fish, and also, putting more of it on your food. So I think that's another valuable thing I learned from Chinese medicine is, our salt intake even varies individually. And even throughout the year, like in the wintertime, you're going to crave more fats and salt to keep your body warmer, less so in the summertime, unless you're sweating a whole lot. So I think bottom line is follow your desires. Like if you're craving salt on something, put it on there, as long as it's the quality that Selena's talking about.
So, I agree. And I think I kind of want to also explain that people might not understand how to, what these minerals are doing. They are our electricity. These are radioactive minerals, and that doesn't mean radiation. These are radioactive minerals, and there's about 12 of them in the periodical scale. And that's why sea salt is so awesome, because you need these radioactive minerals to ignite all the other ones to work. And that's why when you start isolating these minerals, the charges aren't happening. Without those electrical charges, your nervous system, everything is off balance. And that's why you might have, adrenal fatigue, or you might get shakes and things. Or when you're in an accident, the first thing they put you on is a saline drip. Why do they do that? To prevent you from going into shock. Why? Because your homeostasis is completely knocked off, and the electrons in your body is going crazy. And that's why we really need minerals. And that's why you need them, I think, in their whole form, instead of just taking a supplement of calcium. Because if you just took calcium or just magnesium by itself, it doesn't work. You need these bounds for them to work. They just don't, they will not work. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think people understand, biological transmutation. It's such a great book because he talks a lot about when you've isolated nutrients and how they don't work. But then he also talks about you can take sodium and it can transmute into potassium. You know what I'm saying? The transmutation of these minerals and why they are just so important in its whole form. And that's really it. And I've brought in some other sea salts that don't have the same beautiful mineral complexity, because the ingredient manufacturers for processed foods, they don't care about those minerals. And I haven't been able to get that market share with it. So to go back to where you said, Betty said, oh, this is other salt in Spain, but it has this. So I just got back from visiting that salt in Spain. And I saw the way they made it, and it's very pristine. It is so beautiful. It's acres and acres and acres of salt flats that nobody's even allowed on. It's beautiful. What makes this salt different from the other salts is they wash it. They wash it to where it's always a consistent mineral composition no matter what. There is no magnesium in it. There's no calcium in it. There's no potassium in it. It's pure sodium chloride, but that's all that's in it. There's no additives in it at all. There's no free-flowing agents. There's nothing in it. When a person is making a product, the chips, the crackers, and they want sea salt, they don't want to pay the price of sea salt. See? So I decided to pick this salt up. I will never put it in a package just to be selling it the way it should, you know, that way. But for the ingredient people that need a good sea salt that's clean, that doesn't have dextrose and free-flowing agents, I picked it up. 20 years ago, Donna, I would have never picked that salt up. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Well, not exactly. I'm a little bit confused because you have brought salts in for a while that, and are you saying that basically you really looked at them and got rid of them, and you really refined down to the best ones? And then also this salt, it isn't high in potassium. I thought it was high in potassium. So
there's two salts that I just saw in Spain.
Okay. That's why I'm confused.
The salt that I'm talking about was the salt that I refused 20 years ago.
Now I'm looking at it. So if I need with my genes, I need a potassium rich salt. So now the same visit, I went
to see this place, and this is so interesting. So over 2,000 years ago, the Mediterranean Sea came over in Spain, and it kind of flooded the entire region of this place, of Alicante, where this salt is from. Then the water receded. After it receded, it had been trapped underneath the ground, which started faults in that area, which made mountains in that area of this underground seawater. When it made this mountain of this underground seawater, it kind of possessed all this potassium. So it's actually a cave salt. When you walk into this cave, it's like icicles of salt everywhere, just dripping down all over the place around you. But it's the rainwater and the underground springs that is constantly feeding it. So it's still a kind of a wet salt when it comes out. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Because it's replenished by the underground water and also the rainwater. There is a big mound next to this cave of just sodium. This is the largest source of potassium for people from all over the world, this cave is. The problem they have now is they have way too much sodium because they're extracting the potassium out from the sodium, and they're just selling the potassium. I'm going to bring this salt in its full whole form. And that's the potassium salt that I'm going to send to you so you can taste it, because most potassium salts have added potassium, and potassium doesn't taste good like that. But it's in natural form. You're going to love this. You're going to really love this flavor. I'm excited to bring this in. We're just now, getting all the details and everything about this salt, but it's just going to blow everybody away. It really is. I didn't want to bring a mine salt in because of sustainability issue. But at the end of the day, I don't really think that, this salt, because the rainwater and the spring water, they're never going to not be able to replenish this mineral salt that's being made. So, mine salt, they're always concerned that they just keep taking it, and there's not going to be anything left.
Will we run out of salt? Is there a danger at all? Like, so many people.
No, you will never run out of salt. Right now, I probably have 12 other salt sources that I don't know what to do with them, but they're really good salt sources that I can't bring in.
Okay, great.
Well, this is the only one I've ever found like this. I have done it in these 40 years. Haven't found one like this one. The deep sea salt blew me away. This one even blew me away more.
Wow.
Yeah.
And just tomorrow, right away today. So you were saying it's a cave salt, and Himalayan salt is a cave salt. You know, I watched as the Himalayan salts took the world by storm, and I just kind of cringe because huge difference in quality. You know, they come from Pakistan, not Himalaya, beautiful, poetic Himalaya. And it's a dirty country. There's wars going on, and they don't have the facilities to transport things out of there and ship them cleanly. So I've never been a big fan of Himalayan salt, but didn't you find a good source for it? Yeah, I would only get it from you.
No, I did find a good source for it, but I'm still not bringing it in. It's, you know, I don't need it because it's an identical profile of my fine ground. Actually, the Himalayan salt is 97.63% sodium chloride.
Oh, wow. So that doesn't work for the genes that I'm talking about. Well, I think people need to spread the word about that because so often I'll pick up a unhealthy bar that's supposed to be a food replacement, and they'll proudly say Himalayan sea salt, like so special. So I want that word to get out there for sure, is that it's not the best salt by any means. Let's see. Now, people crave salt, and I think if your doctors told you don't eat salt, but there you are craving salt, I think you're making a big mistake. But Selena, have you and all, I mean, first of all, I know you have huge number of medical doctors and practitioners that love the salt and recommend it to everybody. And you've been collecting a huge, huge stable of practitioners. But in all the feedback that you've gotten, have you tell us some stories that you've gotten from, like, can people become addicted to salt?
I'm going to first tell a story of a Dr. Hanau. He's a pediatrician in Miami that I met maybe 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when the children come into the office, they always come in because they're sick, the first thing that the nurse is supposed to do is give them a glass of water, warm water, with a pinch of the Celtic sea salt in it. He said 50% of the children, when he finally gets to see them after they've been sitting there, they're feeling already better. 50% of them. So that's just one thing that I can share, that the doctors get to see an instant result with their patients when they give. And this is why I don't think you could take, vitamin A and feel an instant result. It's an electricity. You just charge the battery and you just alkalize the body. So you're going to immediately feel a difference. And that's what's so magical about the sea salt. As far as people actually getting addicted to salt and things like that, I really can't think of anybody or anything, you know, with an addiction. My son-in-law, they're from Russia, and his mother loves salt. I've never seen anybody eat as much salt as she eats. Mm-hmm. She's never had a high blood pressure problem, nothing. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
It's such a personalized. Exactly. We're all different. We have different needs. Those needs change all the time. That is a perfect example. Well, so the last thing I kind of wanted to go into was fermentation. Like, we both ferment vegetables, for example, and they have to have salt in them. And I remember many years ago, Anne Wigmore had just begun teaching people about her veggie crowd, I think is what she called it. And she didn't put any salt in it because, you know, that community, the rock community, was against salt. It was really mushy. And here I come along, you know, it's this tiny little community using veggie kraut. And I want the world to go back to eating this very ancient, really, really important food that has so many functions. And the big salt question came up. So when I was visiting you, you had a batch that you had made that were so delicious because you'd used a pretty good amount of salt. I mean, I was surprised. I think you used 2 tablespoons for a whole batch that you made. And I thought, wow, is that okay? You know? And so I started doing a lot of research and I found out that the fermentation process is a process that changes. Like, certain bacteria show up in the very beginning and then new ones come along and they keep, you know, advancing the process. Well, some of the microbes are killed in the beginning, but it's very, very important to put the salt in to keep those vegetables fresh. And actually the government, you know, like, if you're making fermented vegetables commercially, you must put the salt in because you'll attract bad bacteria. So do you have anything to say about that? Like, your own self, your own personal experience in using the salt?
My experience, I think the ones I've tasted with salt are much better. I have not compared regular table salt culture vegetables with a sea salt culture vegetable, but I do know that in Jacques' book, he did do some research, and his research was that if you don't have a salt that has trace minerals in it, it is not going to feed those micronutrients the same. So he said it's been proven that they did a experiment, you know, hundreds of years ago, where they put fish in distilled water, or, you know, water that doesn't have any kind of sodium or anything, and the fish
live fish. And they died.
It would die. So basically, you know, and then you have Cantone, you know, the Dr. Cantone, that he actually took blood out of a dog and replaced it with seawater, you know, the matrix water, and the dog's vital signs were normal in 18 hours. So, you know, so I just think that
somebody has diarrhea or any reason why they're out sweating, they might get dehydrated. That's exactly what they do. They put saline solution in them.
Yeah, but I think really to do pure sodium chloride cultured vegetables versus all of the essential minerals that are in, you know, in sea salt, I think that it's going to produce a better one. And that's, but I have not done an actual laboratory analysis of one and the other. It would be a great experiment to really do if there is actually any difference in that. But even Lima Osawa, in her book, she says you should never eat vegetables without sea salt. So, you know, she even recognized the importance of what the sea salt did. And even, you know, when you're cooking, you don't even have to use oil sometimes. If you just put salt on your food, on the water starts to come out, and it's the natural juices of the vegetables that draws it out, because the magnesium in sea salt is like a moisture magnet, so it pulls it out.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the other thing too is that just suddenly it popped into my mind that the Maasai warriors that were so amazing, you know, strong, healthy, very tall, 7 feet. Beautiful muscles, dangerous. They sharpened their teeth. And if they came after your tribe, you were gone. They drank blood. And they did it because they'd eat the meat, but they needed minerals. So they'd slit little slits in this cow, and they raised cattle, and they would literally drink that blood. So that's, it's really been around a long time. People didn't know. They didn't have the science that you have, for example. But they absolutely knew they needed it to be strong. So I hope that our interview here has cleared up a lot of misunderstanding about salt. And Selena, is there any sort of last minute thought that pops into your mind that you want to leave people with?
I think that the main thing is that I realized that salt is like nature's first mineral supplement, and I really have such an appreciation for it. But I know salt has gotten a bad rap. And so I feel like there's also some really amazing, important things in just herbs and plants. There's minerals in those too that I think that we kind of forget, that land food has minerals too that are essential for our body, and we tend to forget it. But if you look at all the different, you know, different herbs out there, and you see what kind of, you know, potassium and phosphorus and things like that they have naturally occurring in it, you know, kale and all those things, I think we can't ignore it. And knowing that, I'm developing another new product that I'll be launching in March, and it's going to be an herb base. It's going to be very, very little salt in it. I'm going to be using potassium salt because, so that'll be the base. But there's going to be things in it like kale powder, all these mushrooms, like 12 different mushrooms will be in it. So it's going to be another seasoning that will be complemented. But it's just to let people know that there are other options of getting your sodium in you and your minerals in you. It's not just this. So I'm kind of taking responsibility. And if Jacques was here, I'm sure he would do the same thing.
And we're very proud of you, by the way. You've done an amazing job. And now I hope when people go to the grocery store and they walk by down the salt aisle and they see that little blue box, they just keep walking right on by. And they call you because you can definitely buy Selena salts in health, Whole Foods and places like that. But now you know that there's so many more salts that you can just, it's like collecting different olive oils, and It's the same thing with salt. They have all have their own unique flavor, a little bit different mineral profile. So why be limited to one thing in a blue box? So Selena, thank you so very much for clearing up the confusion. And then I got a chance to talk about these two genes and get the truth out there, because people should be taking in salt even with these salt sensitive genes. Thank you.
So do people get tested? Can they get tested to see if they're salt sensitive, Donna? How would they get tested if my customers call me and they want to understand if they are salt sensitive?
They can, in 23andMe and some other DNA reports, they all test to see if you've got AGT and ACE and AGT, because, people are concerned about blood pressure, and then which, of course, causes cardiovascular disease. So they can absolutely take, if they've gotten millions of people have already done 23andMe, it's in your DNA if you've done that test. It's very easy to find that out. You just have to run it through a program that tells you if you have it when they look at your genes. And now you know what to do. Once you find out if you have whether you have salt sensitive genes or not, it's really critical to eat the right kind of salts.
I do want to say, if you do have a friend or anybody that you know that does not like to drink water, you know how some people just aren't water drinkers, just experiment and have one of the crystals of salt and just lay it on their tongue, and you watch them. They will crave water. It's like a moisture magnet. So I think it's best here for people that just will not drink water. But because your body, you put that in there and your body's saying, I need water, and they will go straight for the water.
Wow. I'm one of those people. I don't have a great craving for water unless it's got something in it. But I think children too. And children is another great tip. Well, thank you very much, Selena. Have a great day, and we really appreciate the time that you spent with us.
I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity.